Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Welcome to Untriven on Joy 94.9 with your hosts Alan and myself Hugh. On tonight's show we'll be talking to David Lim from Different Strokes. David will talk about his life in Malaysia, his Pentecostal church upbringing and the big move to Australia at 12 years old. David will also talk about being the queer officer at uni and his work here as a presenter at Joy 94.9. Once again, we have another great On-Driven show coming up here tonight on Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon, tonight with Hugh and me, Alan. Hello, Hugh.
Hello, Alan. How are you?
Not too badly. Just very quickly, before we get into the main part of the program, just very quickly run through a couple of bits of news. Firstly, Nadoc Wheat, National Aboriginal and Islander, goodness me, and I can't remember what the other stand for. They've got Outback Nadoc 2009 celebrations coming up on the 9th of July. That's next week, next Thursday, Order of Melbourne, Level 2, 401 Swanson Street, opposite RMIT, 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. That sounds like it's a late night. Just to let our Indian friends know that contrary to moves by the Indian government only about 6 months ago, the Indian government is actually going to re-look at Section 377 of their laws, to see Section 377, see if they might perhaps, the emphasis is perhaps, overturn illegal gay sex and homosexuality in India. Bangkok Pride seems like it's gone to sleep, unfortunately, after 10 years, and which is rather a pity because they were very colourful pride marches that they used to have in Bangkok. I'd attended a couple of them in the early years. And finally, Rainbow Visions in Sri Lanka are having their Pride Week as well, and I won't give you the details of that. You can look that up on the web, but it seems like Pride is taking off in quite a number of places around the world. It's rather unfortunate that it's being stopped in Bangkok. Over to you, Hugh. We've got a very interesting Joy presenter as our guest
tonight. We do. We've got David Lim from Different Strokes. David, welcome to Untriven.
Thank you for having me on tonight.
That's great. Do you want to tell us what the music was that we just played? Because I'll just tell the listener that all the music tonight's David's choice.
Oh, well, anyone who listens to Different Strokes, you know, the program I do on Wednesday nights, would be aware that Jade always brings up the fact that I spent ages picking songs for our show. And, you know, even as a guest on your program tonight, I've, you know, labored over the four songs that there's a very specific reason why I chose that track before. And the artist, her name is Anggun. She's actually an Indonesian singer. The song was called Mantra. Now, in the 90s, when I was growing up in Malaysia, I wasn't very much familiar with a lot of the local artists, but I knew Anggun. I've heard of her. She was one of the very few Asian or Southeast Asian artists that actually got on MTV. You'd literally see a Madonna video and then Anggun right up next. So it used to, you know, really confuse me a little. I thought, wow, she's actually made it. Who is this woman? And then, I started looking into a bit of her Indonesian tracks. And then when I moved to Australia many, many years later, I kind of lost touch with her because her music's never released here. But then I learned French in high school, and then I realized Anggun actually sings in English, in Indonesian, and in French.
Oh, okay.
So I feel very privileged to understand all her tracks.
Good of you to bring along her music tonight, then.
Well, I have to.
Let's start with your story, David.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us where you come from.
Well, I was born, and the first 12 years of my life I spent in Malaysia. I was born in Kuala Lumpur.
Okay.
It's become quite a shopping city of late. You know, I remember when I first moved to Australia 10 years ago, people didn't really know where Malaysia was, especially the school kids. They didn't really know where Malaysia was, but they would have heard of Singapore. Obviously, they would have heard of China and Indonesia because it's in the news quite a lot. But Malaysia, they were a bit confused as to where this country was. But I'm glad to say a lot of people now would know where Kuala Lumpur is.
Yeah. What type of upbringing did you have?
Well, it was, I would say it's very Christian. You know, I am Malaysian Chinese, so I'm very Chinese in appearance, but, you know, might be a little tanned, so I'm not as yellow, I'm not as pale as a Japanese man. I'm kind of a nice, kind of cocoa-y colour.
Light brown.
Yeah. I don't know what you describe this. It's winter, and I'm not as dark as I was, you know, a couple of months ago. But I would say I have a very Christian upbringing as a kid. sort of half of my family is Buddhist, but not really the practicing kind that goes to the temple very frequently. So that's my mum's side of the family, but my dad's side of the family, Pentecostal Christians.
But do you find that that the family mixes the two up in terms of both Buddhism and Christianity? Because I've seen that in other Chinese families where they tend to mix the two together, and somehow or other the two, they sort of believe in both and follow both.
Not so much in my family, I have to say, because it's not something that gets brought up a lot, you know. You go to church, you go to church, that's your business. When it comes to Chinese New Year or the Lunar New Year, we all come together, we all celebrate it. Some might pray to the ancestors, and the other, like the Christian members of the family, might not do so. That's fine, there's no dramas there, it just, life goes on. Don't really talk about it, don't really integrate.
The population of Malaysia, how many Christians against Buddhism would you have? What's the more popular?
Oh, goodness.
It'd be pretty small, wouldn't it? Because it's primarily a Muslim
country. It is primarily a Muslim country. As far as I know, because, well, maybe this is just the statistics I get from the church pastor. You know, Christianity apparently is on the rise in Malaysia. Right. There are lots of very big churches there. I came from one of the bigger churches in Kuala Lumpur, actually. Mm. So, you know, for many years I went there. That was my family church.
You told me that your parents were fairly strict Christians.
Mm-hmm.
So what type of schooling did you do in Malaysia?
It's quite interesting because as Malaysian Chinese, a lot of my cousins, and you know, you could pretty much ask most Malaysian Chinese kids in Kuala Lumpur or any parts of Malaysia, they're more likely to go to a Chinese school. Their parents are more likely to send them to like a private Chinese school. Mm. Everyone in my family did. All my cousins did, except for myself. I actually went to a public school. It was a Malay school. It was a bit different.
Why?
I don't know, I often ask myself that as well. I don't think it was a financial thing. We could definitely afford for me to go to a Chinese school, but I just think, I'm really not sure. It was a decision my parents made, and maybe they felt like, you know, you're living in Malaysia, you should know the national language, and at the end of the day, all the legislations and all the documents, everything is still always going to be in Malay.
Where do you fit in the family? You've got siblings?
Yes, I'm the oldest.
You're the eldest.
Yes,
oh, that's even
right.
More interesting then. Mm-hmm. The fact that that you went to a state or government school.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, if we didn't move to Australia, I wouldn't know where I would fit in that sense. You know, what my education path would have been, you know, in Malaysia and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Would I have, you know, ended up studying overseas? Or, you know, I really wouldn't have known my course of action.
Going to school, a public school, mm-hmm. and all your cousins and the rest of the family all going to Chinese schools, did that make you a little bit different from the rest of the family in an outlook way? Did you look at things differently?
Well, they always saw me as being the lucky one because I didn't have as much homework. Anyone's ever been to a Chinese school would know they're notorious for torturing kids with homework.
Really?
And I got away very easy. Wasn't as strict.
Mm. So But your outlook on life, you don't believe... The gay issue aside, your general outlook on life didn't appear to come up any different to that of your siblings?
Not as far as I know, because I was only there till I was about 11 or 12, so I was still very young at that stage. You know, when you're that age, when you're in primary school, you think about playtime and you think about homework. Mm. That's your world, that's your circle, the extent of your education, that's what you obviously look forward to. So I felt like, hey, my cousins are getting more homework, going to a Chinese school. I don't want that. I don't care. I'm learning Bahasa.
Now, you, we haven't directly stated, but you were involved in a Pentecostal Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see, looking back on that now, how did that affect your childhood?
I think it definitely coloured it a lot. I think with your culture, your upbringing, it really makes you who you are. I can't imagine life without it. You know, as I grow older and, you know, when I was spending a lot of years coming to terms with my sexuality and right now even still trying to figure out where does my sexuality fit in with my Christianity, you know, it's still a bit of a grey area in my head, but I always felt that I don't regret any of it, you know, this is my upbringing. It definitely instilled a lot of very strong values in me, but more so it's just... I think a lot of that has to do with my parents as well, because as you know, there's so many different types of Christians out there, so many different kinds of denominations. At the other day, you know, what my parents and what our church always taught was, you know, it's love for God and love for people.
I tend to agree with that. I was brought up as a Catholic and went to a Catholic school and had a fairly strict upbringing in religion. And I can understand what you're saying. It does give you the basics of not always, but the basics of doing the right thing or loving people or seeing the good in people, I think, sometimes.
I think also it gives you a conscience, so to speak, makes you more aware of the conscience and what's right and what's wrong, and even brings guilt into it as well.
You told me that you, at school in Malaysia, you actually thought about being a pastor.
Oh, yes. Right up to the end of primary school. So I can't say it was that long ago that I considered.
This is On Driven with Alan and Hugh.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au. Or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Welcome to On Driven, Joy 94.9's multicultural show with Alan and Hugh. Our guest tonight is David. David, before the break, we were talking about your life in Malaysia and your church and everything else. And one of the things that Alan, off the air, was talking about was the Salvation Army. Mm-hmm. And
you know, dancing. Well, hey, things might have changed. Bear in mind, I haven't been involved for 30 God, when I think about it, 30 years. Oh,
giving your age away.
Oh, I am. But those days, there was no dancing, and certainly alcohol was out and whatever. So I guess my question to David in the break was, were there similar types of restrictions in the Pentecostal church?
Now, I'm of the theory that, because obviously I'm not a theologian, I don't go to Bible school, I don't study Christianity to that in-depth, so this is my observation of it. I happen to think that it's very much to do with the culture or the country that the church is in. Mm. So, for instance, like I mentioned, you know, with the alcohol thing, in Australian culture, you know, we're more likely to pop a bottle of wine over dinner and, you know, just really have a good time and enjoy dinner with wine. So the church might say something like, you know, you're allowed to drink wine, but just in moderation, as long as you're not making a debaucherous fool of yourself, that's fine. That might be something the church might say. Well, let's say in Malaysia, you know, we might get a message like, don't drink, abstain from alcohol, full stop, because, you know, who knows the actual political climate or the actual culture itself there, predominantly Muslims, and they don't drink.
They don't drink, yeah.
So I think it's very much dependent on the culture, and there are lots of influences. I mean, a lot of people believe that church theory or church characteristics are very rigid and all that, but I think it's also just like every other walks of life, every other aspect, very much, you know, dependent on the culture it's in.
And I think most religions are similar as far as alcohol and everything else goes, you know. In moderation, it's okay, but as even Catholics in different countries, it depends on the country, how strict they are.
But different churches, and most of them I'd have to observe, do have certain views on homosexuality. So where and how did the gay boy start and how did you deal with that?
You know, to be honest, coming out didn't really happen for me until I was 17. Although, if I was honest, I kind of look back, I can honestly say I've always fancied boys. It's just that I never thought about it. I didn't want to think about it.
What about at school in Malaysia? Because you left Malaysia when you were 12, so what was school like for you there? You know, did you have the characteristics of being gay or...?
I guess I always picked out the boys, I guess, you know, my eyes were always definitely going for the boys, but I never really thought about it. As a child, you know, regardless of whether I was at school in Malaysia or in Perth or Melbourne, I was always teased for being gay. You know, people call you things like Pufta, all those horrible schoolyard names that they call you because you're different, because you don't play sport, you know, because you don't walk or talk a certain way, because your interests, you know, might be more Kylie than corn. You know what I mean? It's kids pick on you when you're different. Mm. So I guess I was very much a different kind of boy. That's why I got picked on. But because they kept calling me all these names and making assumptions about my sexuality for so, so many years, I thought to myself, well, I'll be damned if I was gay, because that means that they've figured me out. Mm. They can't figure me out. They don't know me, so I am not going to be gay just because they say I am. So I chose not to think about it for 17 or 18 years.
So when you were at school, it was something you put to the back of your mind?
Absolutely. I didn't want to think about it. I mean, if I was, like I said, if I was honest, if I took a moment to pause and go, I was just checking that boy out. You know, if I actually stopped and realized that, I might have actually come to terms with my sexuality a lot sooner, but the fact that I never wanted to address it in my head for so long actually meant that, you know, it was very much bottled up on the inside. I didn't, you know, explicitly come out until much later.
But at 17 then, what triggered you to rethink your attitude to whether or to assess whether or not you were gay?
I think it all happened in a conversation. It happened in a conversation. My best friend,
This in Perth or Melbourne?
This is in Melbourne. I was 17, okay. And I was very much really living in Melbourne. Happened in a conversation, you know, we saw other boys, one of the footy jocks at school walked past. I said, oh, he's kind of cute. And she looked at me like, what did you say, Dave? And I realised I said it out loud. Wasn't one of those inside voice moments. But after saying that and seeing her reaction, she's just like, okay, yeah, I guess he is. How she was so nonchalant about it, and she was just like, oh, well, you find boys attractive, big deal, let's move on, what do you want for lunch? Mm. You know, that kind of not a big deal about it. So I thought, well, obviously it's not a big deal to her, so why am I making this such a big deal?
Was that a relief for you?
It was, and I think it all started with that ease of talking to someone about it. You know, the fact that I could just have that conversation with someone in a non-judgmental environment meant that I could actually start honestly thinking about my inclinations.
Was this girl Chinese or Caucasian?
She's Caucasian. She's from Slovakia. She's okay. My best friend, yeah.
No, the reason I asked that is I was wondering whether or not there might have been a slightly different reaction had this person been, and I don't want a stereotype at all, but had she been Chinese?
Yeah, it really depends on the individual, depends on the upbringing and whatnot, but you know, at school, when I was in Australia, you know, all these years I've been studying in Australia, I tend to have more Caucasian friends than Asian friends. So, not a real preference thing, it's just...
Just how things have...
Just, yeah, it. How things happened, yeah.
Who accepts you being gay more, would you say? I mean, Malaysian Chinese, do you have any problems with them accepting you being gay?
Well, the only Malaysian Chinese that I have in my life would be my family members. I am explicitly out to my immediate family, so mum, dad, little brother knows about it. But, you know, the rest, like cousins and aunties, is not something I bring up because I feel that my personal life is what it is. It is personal. At the end of the day, we don't talk about sex. Mm. We don't talk about, you know, that homosexuality. It's not really a topic we address, but I feel that I've got nothing to hide. My boyfriend comes over for family dinners, like, duh, you know. Who do you think this is?
That's right. This is On Driven with Alan and Hugh.
Diversity is Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon, and you're with Hugh and Alan tonight on Orange Ribbon, and our guest in the studio is Joy presenter David Lim from the Different Strokes program, which is a little bit later tonight, I think you're on, aren't you?
It is. It's a very David Lim Wednesday tonight.
You're doing a solo tonight, aren't you?
I am, but you're not meant to know about that because my co-host will technically still be on the airwaves.
Oh, okay. Oh, technically, yes, we've done a few tricks like that too.
Oh, yeah, it's all magic. Magic of radio.
Now, we've got a message. Now, thank you very much, Ben, for sending this message in to us. And Ben's talking about Chinese Malaysian, Chinese Singaporean against mainland China and how he thinks, and I think this is what he's saying, that there's more Chinese Malaysian, Chinese Singaporean than mainland China. We really don't know. I haven't seen any stats.
I think I had an email discussion with Ben on this very topic a week or two ago, but we would love to talk to I know a couple of mainland Chinese guys who are in relationships with Caucasians, but I'm sure there must be more around than that, obviously.
Maybe, Ben, you should give us a call. Maybe you should come on the show and talk about
it. Talk about
it. You maybe know more than what we do, but give us a call. Anyway, Alan said, our guest tonight is David Lim, and we were talking about your life in Malaysia and coming out. You mentioned to your family, but let's talk about briefly coming to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
How old were you when you came here?
I was 12 when I came to Australia, so this would have been in 1999.
We can do the maths.
Oh, it's fine. People always think I sound 17 or whatever anyway. It's good to shock them that I'm in my 20s. But, yes, I came to a country pre-GST, so that was a good time.
So where did you come to in Australia?
Well, we initially moved from KL and immigrated to Australia, so we landed in Perth. The reason we chose Perth was because my auntie was there. naturally you'd want to move to a place where there's family. You know, moving to a new country is daunting enough as it is, but if you have family there, it tends to make things a little bit better. So she and her family was obviously a great deal of support to us, helped us transition in. But I found school in Australia to be very, very much different to school in Malaysia.
Was that a culture shock for you?
Definitely, definitely a culture shock. Can't even begin to tell you. One of the first things we noticed was that people walked around barefoot.
I found that really odd when I came here.
Really?
Coming from Scotland, when people were walking about with bare feet, I used to think, oh, the poor souls, they've got no shoes.
You know, I was talking to my boyfriend about this a couple of days ago, and he was just like, oh, well, you're living in a rather, he didn't want to say, lower socioeconomic kind of suburb. I said, oh, no, no, no. Hells no.
People Please there- don't tell us the suburb.
This was in Perth anyway.
Subiaco.
Subiaco is not so bad, but bottom line is there are lots of really nice mansions, and I didn't get the connection between walking to the supermarket with your bare feet and being poor or being bogan or anything like that. I just thought it was just a style there. So I recall one afternoon going to my mum and say, do you want to try this thing that all the locals are doing? I kid you not, you know, this is such a kind of fobby kind of thing to say. You know, I went to my mum because we lived next door to a supermarket, so if it did hurt or if the bitumen really burnt our feet...
You could get home quick.
We could run, we could buy a $2 pair of thongs and we could walk home in those. So I told my mum, do you want to do this thing that all the locals are doing? We walk bare feet to the supermarket. We did. We regretted it. We regretted it. We came back. We looked at the soles of our feet and they were all black.
Yeah.
And my mum's like, never doing that again. I don't know how they do it.
You know, it's something I have never done. I can't even walk around in bare feet at home. Never mind walk to the supermarket. And
we were nowhere near a beach, so I can't even justify that.
What about school? You know, going to school in Perth, how did people react to you then?
I think the difference in education, I mean, I've always been public schooled, you know, whether I was in Malaysia or whether I was in Perth or Melbourne, I've always gone to public schools. I find that the emphasis in education was more about expressing yourself in Australia. In Malaysia, if you had a question, you don't put your hands up because, God forbid, the teacher has to repeat themselves. So I found it very strange, you know, to be more assertive. I felt like I had to speak up a bit more. And in a way, I'm very much, you know, grateful for the education system here and, you know, me coming at such a young age because it taught me to express myself and to assert my point of view and, you know, have an opinion about things. But transitioning here, being the quiet kid in class, not such
being
a good thing.
Being Asian in Perth, was that a problem? Was there many Asians there and there?
You'd think not because there are lots of Asians there, but I felt at the time, well, you know, bear in mind this was probably around 10 years ago and I was in primary school and people are very close-minded. People are quite racist there. And I definitely copped a lot of racial slurs and all that, especially because I couldn't speak English in the way they can speak English. Because although we did speak English in Malaysia, we have very much a broken English kind of structure happening. The accent, of course, makes it very difficult for people to understand sometimes. And I say things a little bit funny, so they make fun of me.
And did you get the gay slant there as
well? Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the same no matter what year level I was in at school, whether it was primary school or high school, even right up to year 12. I remember one year buying, this was when we've moved to Melbourne, I remember one year buying a Sugar Babes CD, and one of the popular girls at school questioned my motives for buying this CD. In hindsight, I kind of thought, girl, back off.
I know.
It's my money. Yeah. I'll spend it on what I want. But she kind of, you know, ask me a question in a way that, are you buying this record because you find the women sexually attractive or do you like the music? And I don't know what was how she was trying to suss out my sexuality. Like, was she trying to make a link between my inclinations towards liking pop music as me being flamboyant and gay? But regrettably at the time, I made up something about me being sexually attracted to the female singers. You know, it's such a... Yeah, I laughed too.
That was a good one.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, yeah, of course I love them. Great tits.
What about... sorry.
Control yourself there, Hugh.
Might never say those words again.
You said you were a happy-go-lucky kid there. But how did you find moving into Australian life and and getting used to the way the food even. I mean,
the food. I thought the food was great, but the shame about it was because in Kuala Lumpur, at any time of the night, you can go out at 2 or 3 in the morning, and there'll be food. Mm. You know, there'll be restaurants open. You can get chow mein. Mm. Not in Perth. Mm. Maybe not in Melbourne even. Mm-hmm. So, but I think adjusting into the lifestyle, it took a while, but I think you got to have a very positive attitude. A lot of my friends say to me, oh, it's interesting that you have so many white friends, because I know of lots of Asians that come to school and they only hang out with their international student friends and they don't want to integrate. Mm. Now, I have a problem with the word integrate, because yeah. I don't think it's really about that kind of... Integration has a very lose your culture, start wearing flip-flops and get the Southern Star tattooed on your back. You know, it's very kind of denying your culture kind of thing, but I feel that it should be a mix of the both. You know, you embrace your culture, but be bold enough to make some friends with the locals, you know, embrace the lifestyle.
We'll come back to this. This is On Driven with Alan and Hugh.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon with Hugh and Alan tonight, and our guest from the program Different Strokes here on Joy is David Lim, and that's your fourth music track from... Who is that? I suppose I better turn you on. Try that one.
Well, that was Jamelia with Got It So Good. You know, I try to keep the music quite inspirational, uplifting, and all that good stuff tonight. So
you actually told us all the stuff you don't play on your own show.
Yeah.
Beige was the word that was used.
Look how that's been used against me. Yeah.
We'll always remember that. Orange Ribbon plays beige music.
Anyway, let's go back to your story, David.
Yeah.
You told us before the beige music that you moved to Perth in Australia when you and your family first came across. And you explained that you had family there, but it was actually the family that was there made you leave.
That was one of the reasons. I mean, it's at the end of the day, they're still family. You know, whatever tiff you have or whatever disagreements, you know, you got to let that one go and got to move on. Because, you know, at the end of the day, if anything happens, you know, you're going to be there for them. You know it. And they're going to be there for you. So it was just at the time we felt, well, obviously my dad was struggling to find work in Perth. He was a general manager in Malaysia, so he's not used to doing factory work. It was very difficult for him to accept. So he felt that there'll be better job prospects in Melbourne, so we moved all four of us over here. But in terms of what happened between my cousin's family and us, I think it's a lot to do with the church that we were all going to, and Christianity and how it was practiced, or, you know, the kind of doctrine that they had was very different to what we believed was sane or reasonable, because I think they had a couple of rules. Like, you know, a lot of the kids were starting to be homeschooled and they were taught very strict biblical curricular stuff. So they're literally pulling kids out of the public school or private school system and having their parents quit their jobs to stay at home to teach. To homeschool the kids in, you know, what could have been taught at school but with a biblical slant.
That's extreme, isn't it?
It is a little extreme. The girls weren't allowed to wear any kind of skirt that was above the sheen or the knee level. The boys never really wore jeans, and I thought that was very strange. So in a way, my parents kind of thought, okay, this is maybe a little too much, and look, we got to move to Melbourne anyway, so let's just do it.
And I note that you're wearing jeans tonight anyway.
Yeah, it's my form of rebellion.
Before we go further, we have a message from Brian of Collingwood. He says, hi guys, if anyone needs to pick on someone for who they are, they must have a good hard look at themselves before they judge other people. Which is very true, Brian. Thank you very much.
And unfortunately, a lot of people don't. Yeah, unfortunately. Regretfully.
But let's go back to David. And your story has moved to Melbourne. What was it like moving to Melbourne from Perth? Because it's like going from a little country city.
Ooh, the Perth people are not listening to this, are they?
But to a huge city. I mean...
Well, at the end of the day, it's still suburbia that I'm moving from one suburb to another, albeit interstate. But I felt like moving to Melbourne, and, you know, I spent all my teenage years here, so I would say it's a very important formative part of my years that I grew up in a city. And without moving to Melbourne, I'm not sure if I would actually be part of community radio and embracing my sexuality in this way without Joy being so close here. I don't know how it would have turned out if I actually stayed in Perth. Would I be out, or would I be, you know, sneaking around to these gay bars anonymously? I'm not sure what life would have been, but...
But you told me that when you came here and you were still at school, your father had ideas of what you should now do with your life.
Oh, yes. My dad wanted me to be an accountant because he thought that was a profession that was bankable. And for many, many years, he picked the subjects that I did at school. Even right up to, I think, year 11 or year 12, he was still picking accountant, accounting for me. So I kind of thought in year 12, I said, I don't want to do accounting anymore. A, the books don't balance. It's not my fault.
Boring.
B, I just hate figures, and yes, it's boring. I really wanted to do writing. So I told him at the start of year 12, I think I'm going to be a journalist. I'm going to write, you know, so... I did that. English was always my strongest subject, so I got very good marks for that, and I got into journalism, which I did at uni, and that was my Bachelor of Arts. I've completed as well. But, you know, I just felt, at the end of the day, it's something I have to do. I'm going to be working this job, so I better stand up for myself and go, hey, this is what I want to do.
But journalism didn't work out, did it?
Well, I can't really say it didn't work out because I didn't give it a red-hot go, but I can say I decided to not pursue that for many reasons, because... Even from the first week of the first year semester, I knew that I have no interest in news reporting. I wanted to work in magazines, but I thought I'll stick it out just so I can get a degree. Then I'll go work in magazines, which is the path I'm on right now.
So what age did you come out to your family?
Family is a little bit different because I came out to myself and a lot of my friends when I was 17. I think I told my mum when I was maybe 19.
And how did she take it?
She didn't take it... too well at first. She was shocked, and because she's never had that kind of conversation before, a lot of her understanding of homosexuality was very much based in the psychological kind of theories you get from the 70s. At first she thought it was a psychological condition, am I going to need to see someone? She kind of had lots of questions like, how does this happen? Is it biological? Is it fair enough questions, you know what I mean? So before I came out to her, I made sure that I got my foundations and my basis firm before I can answer all these questions. I want to know that I can answer these questions to my mum first before actually coming out to her and, you know, being blindsided by all her questions. So that's why I took 2 years off, and in that time I was queer officer at uni as well. So I was doing gender studies and sociology, started forming my own opinions before telling her and answering her questions.
So what was your job as queer officer? What did it entail?
I think it was just representing queer students and staff at uni. It was very much organising events, get-togethers, and, you know, making friends at the end of the day, making people feel that they're not alone, really.
What about moving on to your dad, then? You've just talked about your mum. When and how did you come to tell your dad?
My dad found out very, very late. I would have to say he's one of the last people on earth to find out. It's quite unfortunate, but I only told him maybe about 6 to 9 months ago. Now, the reason why I didn't tell my dad sooner was because I thought he would kick me out if he found out. You know, I had this fear because he's a very righteous, very Christian, holy man, so to speak. And I knew he had opinions about homosexuality. He wouldn't even let my little brother laugh at jokes of Will and Grace on TV.
Yeah, right.
He would make us change the channel if Will and Grace is on. And I think that's crazy, but, you know, Dad and I have never really seen eye to eye with those things.
So how did he take it?
He took it quite well. Really surprised me. Obviously didn't faze him at all, because he was just like, oh, I kind of suspect it, but it's good to know.
Yeah, he appreciated you telling him.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think if he was ever hurt, it was just the fact that he was last to know.
How did you, moving on a little bit, how did you get involved with Joy?
I got involved with Joy. First of all, I started on a different community radio station. Me and Jade Gulliver, who I believe she was on the show.
Different Strokes.
That's right. Last week or something, she was on your show as well.
She was.
We both moved to Joy because we had a show called Different Strokes. Still do. It's on 10 to 11 tonight. Insert plug. We always felt that that would be better suited for a GLBTIQ audience, because it's essentially about a flamboyant, pop music loving gay man. Don't know who he is, and a very indie and down to earth, you know, kind of lesbian. And we felt that, you know, the other station might not get it as much as the Joy people would. So yeah, that's why we moved to Joy. And we thought
and
it was a
how
great move.
How long have you been here?
Maybe about 2.5 years now.
So you were doing work at Joy and doing programming at Joy on a gay radio station, and your dad still didn't know.
I think he always looked at it as just me wanting to get a crack in an industry.
Oh, he knew you were actually working.
He knew it was a gay and lesbian radio station. I don't think he thought too much about whether you had to be gay to be on the airwaves.
Okay.
Well, you don't really, because we do have...
How can you find out?
That's right.
We do have people. One of our newsreaders is not gay, so there you go.
So Different Strokes is coming up in 2 hours' time.
I'll be here all night.
Okay, so everyone listen on for the show tonight, Different Strokes. And that's the show finished, I'm afraid, David.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
Goes by quickly.
Yep, that's on Driven for another week. Our special thanks to David for his story. You can hear David and Jade later tonight on Different Strokes. Coming up next on Joy, Simon and Paul with Global Sounds. Thanks for joining us on Driven tonight. We'll be back again at the same time, 7 p.m. next Wednesday, with more insights into our GLBT multicultural community here in Australia and around the world. Thanks to Nick on reception for his help tonight, from Alan and myself, Hugh. Good night.
Bye-bye.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.